So the big question is this: what would you do if money didn't matter? Say you had millions in your bank account, what would you focus on? Would you spend more time with your family, with your wife, with your kids, take family vacations? Would you pursue your gifts and talents and dreams, serve your local community, teach others, serve your church community? You see, if what you would do if money didn't matter is pursue your gifts and talents and dreams to serve others, then that is probably what you should be doing. The problem is, most people are in the rat race, living 5 inches in front of their face with no time to pursue what they were born to do. That is the problem, and the solution is to develop enough passive income to replace your working income so you can quit your job and be free to live your life the way you were created to. That is the solution, and this podcast will show you how. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to another awesome episode of Cashflow Dad Life. I'm stoked for our guest that we have today. We have Mr. Bill Crane. He's got years and years, decades and decades of real estate experience. He's a husband, father, mentor. He's done just about everything there is to do in real estate. But today, he's going to share with us his knowledge, his expertise, and his wisdom on how to do live-in house flipping, which is a pretty unique concept. But first, Bill, if you could tell us a little bit about your backstory, tell us a little bit how you got started in real estate.
Absolutely, Ryan. Well, thank you so much for having me on. And I love your concept of what did you call it? Dads in real estate or
cash flow dad life?
Oh, cash flow dad life. Oh, it's so awesome because I feel like, why did I think of that? Because that's kind of the life I've been living forever. You know, I got married young and and we started a family, and it's been all about cash flow ever since. Because as you know, wow, it's expensive to have a family.
But how get I any got, cheaper.
How I got started in real estate, you know, I grew up a poor kid. I lived in an apartment, kind of a not so great apartment, but I had to walk to school about a mile or so. You know, it was uphill both ways through 3 feet of snow and all that stuff.
Right.
My kids love that story. But I had to walk past these spectacular homes on the way to school. And I always thought to myself, well, how come I have to live in an apartment and these people get to live in these amazing homes? So I was always fascinated by real estate as a kid. And then I was lucky enough to grow up kind of at the beginning of the information age with people like Dave Del Dotto and Carlton Sheets running infomercials about how to get rich in real estate and buying these beautiful homes for no money down. And I thought to myself, well, I don't have any money, so I'm qualified.
Right.
So it always fascinated me about real estate. So, you know, right out of high school, I went to work for a builder and to learn everything I could about real estate. And I learned both sides of it because there was the sales side and then there was the construction and management side. So I really learned both sides of the business. And I was lucky in that my superintendent liked drinking and playing golf more than he liked actually managing the job site. So he leaves this 18-year-old kid to run the project. So it's kind of thrown to the wolves, but it was an awesome, awesome way to learn under fire.
Yeah. Sometimes that's the best way, just trial by fire.
Yeah, just throw you right to the wolves. And man, those guys, all those contractors, they were definitely wolves when it came to taking orders from an 18-year-old punk.
Right.
There was a lot of pushback, but, you know, it kind of made a man out of me. And it made me, it was part of what made me the person I am today. And I credit a lot of that to my mother because she started me selling it at 5 years old because we were poor and we needed the money. You know, I just thought it was normal, but she had me door knocking, selling anything from pine cones to candy bars to newspapers, door to door. But you wanted to talk today about the live-in house flipping.
Yeah. So this is actually a pretty controversial topic. And that's why I wanted to talk to you about that today. You've got a lot of experience in a lot of different areas. And of course you're a real estate mentor, but this is one of the interesting things, because I hear all the time, you know, Robert Kiyosaki says, well, your own house is a liability. And then you got other, you know, popular gurus out there like Grant Cardone saying, you want to live in a place that you rent, and you want to rent the places that you own, and that you need to be like this mover shaker, like shifty, and that your house is a liability. And I completely disagree with that, because there are so many advantages to owning your own home and what you can do with the equity inside that. So what's your take on it? What were the steps that you took
in order to change your own house from being a liability to a tremendous asset.
And I totally agree with you, Ryan, and disagree wholeheartedly with Grant Cardone and also Robert Kiyosaki, because I don't believe that the home that you live in is an asset. I mean, a liability. It is, of course, an asset.
Right.
Because, first of all, for your home to be a liability means that you did it all wrong. You bought it wrong. And a lot of times that might be true. But as I'm sure you teach people, and I do as well, that when you buy the house right, it is anything but a liability. It's a huge asset. You can make a ridiculous amount of money. And in some cases, I've even told people that real estate's the only thing that I know of that you can overpay for in a few years, make a killing on it. And it's just so true because, you know, besides the tax advantages, and to me, those are just a bonus. Like, I never buy a piece of real estate because of the tax advantages. You know, it comes down to, is it going to cash flow? Am I going to be able to force the appreciation? So in other words, I'm going to buy it low and then I'm going to do some repairs to it and then sell it as high as I possibly can, anywhere from 2 to 5 years later, using the model that I use. So what the live-in house flipping is, really what I do is I show people how they can make that big money, that big investor type money, without having to flip 10, 20, 30. I've even heard of people flipping 100 homes a month. And I have no idea why they would want to do that.
Sounds like a headache to me.
It's so much work. And these people are mostly wholesaling it. Now, maybe it's just because I'm a licensed realtor and a broker. But to me, I think wholesaling is kind of on the edge of potentially illegal activity, because what people are doing is they're finding a buyer and they're finding a seller, to putting them together, right? And at least in my state, that's called practicing real estate without a license. So I personally would never want to go there.
That's the real estate broker in you that.
Exactly. So, I mean, I just know how tough the state of Illinois is on people. And I've heard of people getting in trouble for that, because it is a fine line, you know, when do you cross over it? But what I like to show people how to do, because someone showed me, or I learned it, I don't even know how I came across this, but I'm surprised how many people don't know that you can actually cash out of your house 100% tax-free if you live in it for 2 years or more. So 2 years out of the last five.
You mean cash out on 100% of your equity?
Cash out on 100% of your profit. So your equity may or may not be all of your profit, and then up to a certain level. So for example, $250,000 if you're single, or $500,000 if you're married and filing jointly. So now most people aren't probably going to be profiting $500,000, you know, unless they're in certain markets like maybe Manhattan or Southern California. But the vast majority of the country definitely has the ability to make more flipping one house every 2 to 4 years than they do at their job. I mean, it's really not hard to make anywhere from $20,000 to $100,000 in a 4 year spread. If you buy the house properly in the right area that needs certain types of improvements, and then you can maximize that equity. So what I actually show people how to do, because the rule is two out of the last five, is to buy a home, and then anywhere from 2 to 3 years later, you sell the home or rent it. What I like to do is rent it out for another 2 years, and then cash flow even more. So some of that depends on what the market might be doing at the time. So, like, for example, if the market is still going up, then definitely want to rent the property so that it can gain even more appreciation over the next 2 years, and I can collect those rents. Yes, I'll have to pay some income tax on the rents, but I can cash out of it tax-free once that is done. Now, there is some things in Congress that they're trying to change it, but I kind of don't think they will, because that is really important to millions and millions of people. And it could really help so many more, I think, accumulate wealth, because what I see happening in our country, and being in the real estate business, in particular working with banks, because I'm a foreclosure REO broker as well, I really see an agenda out there that they want renter nation. And the reason they want renter nation is because when people are renting, they don't accumulate wealth. And that is ultimately why I disagree with people like Robert Kiyosaki and Grant Cardone, because I see that they have their own agenda, you know. And it would be awesome if Robert and Grant would come on a show in the future and all four of us could debate the subject. But you know what? Yeah, if you can afford a $20 million penthouse in Miami Beach and you have $500 million worth of assets under management, then go rent whatever the heck you want. But for the normal, average, everyday people, there's no other way I know of passively to generate that kind of income. You can't do it in the stock market, and for a lot of reasons. For one thing, who in the stock market is going to lend you anywhere from $100,000 to $300,000-$500,000, let you accumulate interest on it, and then cash out on it tax-free after 2 years? It doesn't exist.
And you know, one of the main benefits of like starting off buying your own house is if you were to just go and buy investment property, you're just going to go the traditional way and get bank lending. You're looking at, say, the interest rate is at 5.5%. For an investor, it's going to be at 6.5%.
Yeah. You know?
It's going to be a point higher because it's investment property. Well, what if you bought that house and it was yours, and then when you go and rent it out, you're at 5.5% for the next 28 years instead of 6.5%. You know, that's just one of the small benefits. Is like you were saying, you bought it and then you moved out and then you rented it out. So you're making, you know, I remember when I first got started, you know, the house I bought was at a low interest rate and it was like $800 a month, where the rentals in the area were $1,200 to $1,500 a month. So my question is, why in the world would I pay $1,200 a month and $1,500 a month only to 2 years from now have to do that all over again and not have the opportunity to buy something low with a low interest rate and have the ability to cash flow on it?
Yeah. Well, I remember those good old days too. I remember my first mortgage was like $380.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
And the taxes back then were lower than my mortgage. Whereas like right now, my taxes is $1,200 a month.
Oh my goodness.
It's crazy what's happened in taxes, especially in Illinois the last 10 years or so.
So tell us about the model. We've got that first part. So you buy the first house, and in that first house, you live in it for 2 years and you fix it up. So one of the mistakes you mentioned is a house becomes a liability if you buy it wrong.
Yeah.
Well, explain to the listeners the difference between buying something right and buying something wrong. What are the factors that would go into that?
Well, for me, everything's an investment. So like, I'm not buying a home just to live in. I'm looking at it from an investment perspective. So what does the house need right now? And what is the potential after repaired value? And how much is it going to cost to repair that property? You know, right now, if I hired a bunch of contractors, and then also, what do I think I can repair it for over the next couple of years as I'm living in it? What repairs need to be done right away before I'm going to go ahead and move into it?
So you're not going after like speculative deals. You're not buying something like, hey, this is in prime condition and it's a perfect house and there's no repairs that are needed. And in 2 years, maybe the market will go up. You're not banking on the market going up. You're buying it low now and banking on your renovation price has given you equity.
Absolutely. There's very, very little speculation involved. Now, obviously, if something happens, like what happened 10, 12 years ago, and in Illinois, we lost like 90% of value. Well, nobody can anticipate that. But even with that, the losses are minimized because for one thing, just like the stock market and real estate, who loses money? It's the people who freak out and sell everything. It's like, if the market takes a huge dump and you can sustain and you have renters paying the bills, then why would you move? And for me, it's different because I've gotten to the point where like, I don't have a mortgage. And that's really where I want to get everyone to, because when you don't have a mortgage, you know, I can't even explain how empowering it is. And, you know, maybe you have a mortgage and maybe you don't, but only people who don't have a mortgage know what that feels like. And it takes this massive weight off your shoulders. It removes the pressure. You feel like you're retired. You feel like there's nobody that can take it away from you other than the tax man, if you don't pay your taxes for some reason. But you know, even me with the house I live in for $1,200 a month in taxes, it's a pretty darn nice place to live for $1,200 a month. So, you know, it's a definitely a whole lot nicer than that first place I lived in for, you know, $400.
Right, right. Yeah. So for 2 years, you're buying it low, you're fixing it up. And for 2 years, you're fixing it up and just making some improvements as you go. And then after 2 years, you turn around and rent it out.
Yeah, I turn around and rent it out for whatever the market will bear at that time. And the main reason...
Are you, re, Are you refinancing it at this point?
I would only refinance it if the rates came down and if that made sense. But generally speaking, I don't, because what it costs to refinance a property usually is going to outweigh any gain you might have in just a couple of years. And so for me, I'm not holding, for 30 years. I'm holding just for the purposes of cashing out. And I only want to keep the property if it's going to cash flow nicely, over the next X amount of years. But the last few properties I've done, I didn't even have a mortgage on them, cash flows really, really well, So if I'm renting a higher end home for, anywhere from $3,000 to $4,000 a month, and the taxes are, $1,000, well, then that's a pretty darn nice cash flow. So that's a great situation. But even on the entry level homes, like around here, you're talking $1,200 to $1,500. And so the taxes on that might be $500. If it's paid for, you still got a really nice cash flow. And even if you do have a mortgage on it, you're still going to be anywhere from $200 to $500 a month cash flow, depending on your interest rate and what your taxes are. And I also show people how to reduce their taxes, because one thing I've done every year is probably at least 15 years, I didn't get started right away because I didn't know. I didn't know that you could protest your taxes. I thought you just had to take it. It was like sales tax when you buy something at the store, but it's not. So I protest all my taxes and all my properties, and I show my clients how to do that every single year as well, because the fact is you can. So why wouldn't you try to get your taxes as low as you possibly can? Because, if you can save, $1,200 a year on taxes, well, that's $100 a month. It makes a huge difference in terms of cash flow.
So after that 2 years you rented, a lot of people might say, well, typically it takes you 20% to put down on another house. So how, without cashing out on your equity on that house, how are you able to then turn around and buy another house?
Well, certainly not everyone can do it right away. So for example, if let's say you bought your first house for, believe it or not, in my area, you can get a starter home for $100,000, and you stay there for a couple of years, and maybe you got the minimum down, FHA, 3.5% down, and it only went up, 3.5% in that 2 years. But, in terms of the market appreciation, but you've actually forced the appreciation, it's not hard to make that house to the point where it's worth 120, 130, 140. So maybe now you've helped yourself get to the point where you don't have to buy FHA. So I always recommend to people, always put at least 20% down if you can, because paying that private mortgage insurance,
the PMI,
PMI is substantial, and it makes a giant difference in terms of your long-term cash flow. So a lot of times the first step is out of having to go FHA. So they buy a house, they go on for 3.5% down. Now the next one, they can put 20% down, and sometimes they might be somewhere in between, but almost always they're able to jump to that point where they're able to put 20% down. And then, the next one, so that maybe they sell that property and they don't hold it. It really depends on, they can do it either way, right? They can still keep that FHA property and then they can buy another one. I like to see them jump out of that and into a conventional loan, because usually the terms are better. There's less upfront. So there's not only PMI, as you know, but there's MIP, which is another financed, upfront mortgage premium. So it makes a giant difference as soon as they can get into conventional financing. And then from there, it's just a matter of, doing it over and over until they can either hold a property or they can put more money down, have a lower mortgage. It's not really a fixed system. It's what works best for you, because the idea really is to be able to live mortgage free. That's really what it's all about.
So basically the formula is, it doesn't always have to include renting it, but it can include renting it.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you're doing that, then you're probably cash flowing a lot better than if you would just go and buy investment property. But the formula is basically to buy houses that are of low value and then turning around and renovating them in the next 2 years while you live in it. And why that 2 year mark? Is there a tax benefit to doing it?
Yeah, the IRS tax code says that if you've lived in your primary residence for at least 2 years, then you can cash out tax free up to those limits of $250,000 if you're single, $500,000 if you're married. And I want to backtrack a little bit, because the other cool thing about it is, you could actually, let's say you bought a house, 2 years later you rent that house, two more years later, you want to rent the first house, but you find this deal and you want to like kind of leapfrog into this other category, you can actually sell both of those houses, cash out of both of them tax-free, and then put all that equity that you've gained from the first two purchases into the third, and potentially help yourself get up into a new category, you know, where you maybe you're putting 20% down instead of on a $100,000 house. Now you're putting 20% down on a $300,000 house. And because all these appreciation algorithms, if you want to call it that, work on a percentage. So, right, obviously, if you're making 20% on a $300,000 home, it's a whole lot more than 20% on a $100,000 home. So as fast as we can get people up the ladder, you know, not only is it a better neighborhood, better schools, better house, everything else, but there's a higher profit potential as well.
Absolutely. So walk us through your own case study. What you know, from where you are now to your first house, how did that system work?
It worked great. You know, my first house, like I said, I got married young. You know, I was dating this this girl, and you know, we fell in love and we had a baby. So then we had to get married.
Of course.
It wasn't like today where people have a baby and they don't get married. It was like, well, that's what you do. But it, it worked out great anyway, because we've been together for, 26 or so years now. We actually
married. Congratulations. Cool.
Thank you. So, you know, I married my high school sweetheart. So that was the most awesome thing about it. Some days we probably both wonder if that really was our sweetheart, but it's mostly all good. And so, yeah, you know, that first house that I bought was a property that I actually used creative financing, because what happened was, like, I had no money, right? I was fresh out of high school. I had maybe a couple thousand dollars or whatever. So we did what now today would be called an 80-20. So in other words, I got a 20% loan, but I also got a 20% loan on the back end. And then her parents co-signed for us on that second. So that way we actually got into it no money down.
So it was a conventional mortgage that was, your down payment was a second mortgage, basically.
Yeah. So there was still some insurance involved, but it was better than going FHA. And I didn't know anything at the time. I just happened to hook up with this real estate broker who was like, I mean, I thought he was like 100 years old or something, but he was probably 50, you know, who knows, which I am almost now. But he just suggested that that was a better way to go because it would keep our payments lower. And my wife actually worked as a teller at the bank. So we went to a local bank called Cardinal Savings and got our loan there. So it was good that we actually, you know, probably a stroke of luck that we had a real estate agent that actually knew something and wasn't just hungry for a commission, may have been hungry for a commission too, but gave us some solid advice. So we took that financing route and we bought our first house. That was back in like, let me say like 90, I think it might've been 1990 or 91. And trying to remember, what did I pay? I think I paid $68,000 or $70,000 for this.
What's
little
that house worth today?
Well, that's the sad thing, right? See, Illinois has never really recovered from the crash. So although it's worth more today, it's probably double the value today. So like, in other words, today it's probably worth 140 grand. But at the peak of the market, that house was worth probably 240.
Wow.
So certain areas in the Chicago market are still down about 50%, which is good and bad depending on how you look at it, because you can get a, you know, what would be, I've seen homes that in Southern California would be anywhere from $3 to $7 million that here are maybe from $3 to $700,000, you know, so spectacular homes for cheap. And I live in one of those.
Right. Nice.
You know, so it's awesome. But yeah, so that house we lived in for a couple of years, and I actually sold it for, I want to say, $119,000. So that's the sad part. Like, I sold it for $119,000. This is before I even had my real estate license, after just about between 2 and 3 years. So we made almost 50 grand, you know, less real estate commissions and stuff like that. And then we just went right into another house. And actually, the second house, I actually built it. Because like, I was working for a builder, so I learned how to build houses. So in the meantime, I had purchased a lot, built a house, and we lived in that for 2 years. And I can't even calculate the money I made on it, because I literally built it myself. right? Like almost all of it. Like, I mean, I had a carpenter come in and hang trusses and things like that. But I mean, I did the plumbing, the electric, you know, the everything. So like I made a crap ton of money on that house a couple of years later. But wow. The sad thing is those, like that house that I sold for 119 back in like 1993 or four, it might not be worth a whole lot more than that today. Like maybe 140, 150 would be real lucky.
Yeah.
But so that's why you always have to be careful. But like I said earlier, when something's going to come in and reduce the market by 50% like that, nobody can anticipate that. And there's ways to deal with that too if people get stuck. But like for me, for example, for like at least 5 years, everyone's been saying the crash is coming, the crash is coming, the crash is coming. But I didn't buy it because I'm looking at all these economic indicators. You know, when the stock market's going to the moon, there's no crash coming. But now, right, it started to, it peaked already.
Dipping a little bit, yeah.
And now it's doing this little roller coaster ride. So actually earlier this year, I started selling things off. And because I don't know for sure, you know, I don't have a crystal ball if the market's going to crash, but it's kind of looking like it's possible, right? So I'd rather cash out now while I'm ahead. Because I've done it the other way before. I've waited until it's for sure crashing.
Right.
You know, and, you know, that doesn't work either. So I decided, well, I'm going to cash out. I actually have one more property right now that's under contract that'll be closing soon. And then I'm just going to go start looking for more properties. And depending on what happens in the political climate, see, it doesn't matter. If the market doesn't crash, I can find deals. You know, if the market does crash, I can find deals. Because what I always say is, you know, don't be subject to the market.
Right.
So like I'm creating this movement called the Real Estate Insider Movement, and it's showing people how they can buy, sell, and leverage property differently. Mm-hmm. I really want to change the way people buy and sell and leverage property. Because as a real estate insider, I'm never subject to the whims of the market.
Yeah.
You know, I subject the market to my will, you
right.
know. Because I've learned not only how to follow market trends, but how to force appreciation on a property. Does that mean I could never make a mistake? Well, no, of course it doesn't mean that, but
sure.
I just haven't made one yet.
That's real good. Yeah, that's the thing about real estate is that you can be on the good side of, you know, any market fluctuation. Like right now, as the values are still maintaining, they're still higher, they're still escalating slightly. You're deciding to cash out. Now, if it crashes, you probably wouldn't cash out on those properties. You probably hold them and cash flow on them with renters. You
know, absolutely.
That's the beauty of real estate, is that you can be on the upside of any market swing.
Yeah. And the other side of that thing is like, I have, well, like not anymore. I have one left, but I had more properties, right? Because you don't have to cash out on every single one of them, right? Like at a certain point, when your house is paid off and your bills are paid, you like me might say, you know what, I don't want to sell. I'm just going to build a portfolio of property. And so that's how I ended up with some of them. And some of them, I, you know, just saw a property. I already owned one. It's like, well, why not buy it? I can cash flow on it. So it really depends on a person's comfort zone, right? So if you're comfortable being a landlord, you know, then you can have, you know, one rental if that's all you want, or you can have 100. It doesn't make a difference. But the bottom line is this system can work whether you want to be a landlord, or even if you don't, then just sell every couple of years and keep on leveling up in a way that you can't do at your job. Because the beautiful thing about it is, you know, like, I don't even know what the median income is in the United States, but I know it's lower than they report, right? I mean,
it's like 48,000, something like that.
So 50,000. So if every 2 years a person can make $40,000 or $50,000 tax free, that's almost like making $100,000 if you had to pay the taxes. So it's kind of like you're doubling your income and you're not really doing anything because you have to have a place to live anyway.
Right.
You know? So it's like you're living for free. You're doubling your income. You're learning how to do things around the house, which, I mean, for me, maybe not for everyone, but it gives me a sense of pride. I can teach my kids how to do that. I just had my first granddaughter, you know, so someday maybe I'll be teaching her or her husband how to do that.
Right.
But the bottom line is, like, for me, I always saw it as that way out of poverty, you know, because I grew up a poor kid. My mom, God bless her, she had the best of intentions, but she really kind of screwed me up with some faulty programming, right? And I later in life realized it was because she cared about me and she didn't want me to be disappointed, right? So she always taught me that I was born nothing, that I was never going to be anything. So just go to high school and then get a job. Like, that was the programming. You're not going to college. We can't afford it. You're probably not smart enough to get a scholarship. I think she was right about that. But, you know, so just, you know, get a job and do, you know, that's it. Stay there and get a pension. But somehow I rejected that programming and I made a decision that I was going to get out of that life. And real estate was the key that I saw that even I could do, because those guys like Dave Delgado and Carlton Sheets told me that I could. And I saw no reason why I couldn't. And then, you know, 30 plus years later, I'm happy to be able to say it is absolutely possible for anyone to do this. It really just comes down to putting the work in. That's all there is to it.
That's so awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Bill. I mean, I've gleaned a lot from this. One is that strategy, the live-in strategy, and how you can turn what, you know, Robert Kiyosaki and Grant Cardone say is a liability into an asset if you do it right. And to not think so one-dimensionally about it, but really think, okay, well, it's like you said, it's pretty much a liability if you do everything wrong, you know, but there are so many ways that you can do it right. And by the way, I really like Grant Cardone and Robert Kiyosaki. I just think that advice is off mark. And then also, you know, thank you for sharing your personal story with, you know, it's so amazing how our programming affects our decisions. But it's also amazing how we're able to break from that. And how people can break the mold. And especially, I'm sure you see all over the Facebook, I see, you know, I've got ads out there educating people on real estate. And there's so many people that are just like, oh, it takes money to make money. Or, you know, this is a scam because, you know, nothing in life is free. And it's just changing your mindset to say, okay, you're right. Nothing in life is free.
Yep.
But if I don't have the resources, where do I go to find the resources? And so those people like Carlton Sheets and Dave Delgado, you know, really help train and mold a lot of people into thinking creatively on how to acquire assets.
Yeah. So. And I agree with the fact, like, nothing's free. Like, but it doesn't necessarily take money, right? There's sweat equity. And, you know, that's part of what you and I teach people how to do is how to go ahead and harvest that sweat equity so that they can actually do something even if they don't have money. And, you know, God bless America. I don't know anywhere else you can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, where can people go to get more information about you and about what you do and what you teach?
Yeah, my website is BillCrane.com. So that's real simple. It's just, you know, C-R-A-N-E is about the only thing people sometimes screw up is how to spell the last name. And they'll see a lot of stuff there. They can follow me on Facebook or Instagram. It's just Bill Crane Now on Instagram or Twitter. Facebook, you can just search for Bill Crane. There's a few of us, but I'm the best looking one. So.
Okay. All right. That's good. So just search for the good looking Bill Crane.
Absolutely. Yeah. And besides that, you know, do what Ryan and I teach, and cash is filled with money just might fall out of the sky. I don't know for sure, but if you don't do what we say, it definitely ain't going to happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Bill. I appreciate you coming on.
All right. Thanks, Ryan. Catch you later.
Take care.
All right.
Boom. Thanks for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. You're going to want to listen to every episode as soon as it comes out, because each episode has in it an idea or a strategy that could literally change your life. And listen, don't miss out on the free investor tools that I have for you on my website, cashflowdadlife.com. So go to cashflowdadlife.com and get your free swag. And listen, hit me up if you want to talk about how we can get you out of the rat race as soon as possible. Until next time, my name is Ryan Anke, and this was Cashflow Dad Life.